This is What Does It Profit? And I'm your host, Dr. Dawn Carpenter. If you're new to the show, we're a podcast about the social and moral value of economic life, where we probe the question in the work we do, the things we buy, the investments we make, what does it profit? The story today captures both dimensions of profit we talk about on the show, excess earnings over costs, and profit as a benefit to the common good. But let's be real, you know me, I'm a former investment banker who runs around the world and pops in your earbuds trying to show you that we shouldn't be narrow-minded about profit. Today's episode is an example of exactly what I mean. It's proxy season. It's the time of year when shareholders get together and give input on corporate governance. From my own portfolio, Starbucks. I bought shares in the company because I enjoyed my tall, skim, no-water chai latte, and, well, maybe more importantly, I thought they were socially progressive. So, as a shareholder, Starbucks sends out a list of questions about corporate governance. One of those questions happens to be about management abuses against labor organizing. This doesn't make sense. I wanted to understand how my progressive, socially conscious coffee company could be entangled in such a mess. That's why I'm taking us to Ground Zero, to Buffalo, New York, home of the first unionized Starbucks store in the country. Starbucks workers have ignited a nationwide movement to unionize. The movement took root during the COVID-19 pandemic, when morale was low and pleas to the company hadn't helped. In 2021, workers from one Starbucks in Buffalo, New York, voted to form the company's first union. The vote garnered national attention and support from, as you might imagine, Senator Bernie Sanders and singer-songwriter Billy Bragg.
There is power in a factory, power in the land, power in the hand of the worker. But it all amounts to nothing if together we don't stand. There is power in a union.
To better understand how this happened, let's go back to 2020. The COVID-19 pandemic forced many Starbucks stores to operate with skeleton crews, while dealing with rude customers and complicated orders. Many workers who supported the union expressed frustration that Starbucks didn't appear to make worker safety a priority. Michelle Eisen, a Starbucks employee at the Elmwood location in Buffalo and a union organizer, says company officials told workers that customers were no longer required to wear masks inside the stores.
We had a local mask mandate in Erie County, which is the county that my store was located in. And, you know, a mandate is a temporary law. It needs to be adhered to. And when a customer would come into the store without a mask on, we were told by the company that we weren't allowed to ask them to leave, that we weren't allowed to ask them to put on a mask. We weren't allowed to ask them to leave. The company policy was to serve the customer and to move them through the store as quickly as possible, but we had to serve that customer. And I said, well, listen, this is a mandate by the county where we're located. How is that justified? Well, this is the company policy. So not only am I being told I can't enforce a mandate, but I'm also being told that if I refuse to serve this unmasked customer, I could potentially face discipline for it.
Pleas to Starbucks hadn't helped. And Michelle says she and some of her colleagues felt overworked, understaffed, and fed up.
We were one of the few companies in the service industry that stayed open the entire time, and we simply weren't taken care of. We were all exhausted. This was not just me feeling it. I mean, everybody was just, it was a really tough spot to be in. On top of the pandemic, we're also dealing with significant supply chain issues that were just making our lives miserable, significant facilities issues that was leaving us with broken equipment for like months on end. I mean, it was just a really volatile situation.
So Michelle and other workers in the Buffalo area decided to form a union. They called it Starbucks Workers United. On December 9th, 2021, the Elmwood location in Buffalo became the first Starbucks in the country to form a union.
I knew in my heart that Elmwood was going to win. It was one of the most intense kind of emotional experiences I think I've ever had, because even though you knew where your coworkers fell, you had a kind of a good sense of probably how the store was going to come out. Every time one of those no votes was read, it was like my stomach dropping. It was scary. We had done nothing for 4 months but, you know, live and breathe this campaign with the hope of making our work lives better, you know? And so the idea of failing at that was terrifying. And then to win it was absolutely one of the most amazing experiences.
This sparked a flurry of elections across the coffee chain's thousands of locations. At least 278 stores have voted to unionize. But running a successful labor campaign takes more than passion. It takes a lot of resources and a union willing to work with employees. That's where Lynn Fox comes in. She's the international president of Workers United. The organization's Starbucks workers who voted to unionize will join.
The partners all talk to each other. Those of who have been through it know what's coming their way, and they counsel other stores who are activated, and they really do it all themselves. It's quite phenomenal. I mean, we do help with organizers, you know, we do help with resources, but it really is the partners just sort of reinforcing with each other. You know, it's interesting because they were a step ahead. They already had solidarity with each other. And so now they're trying to defend what they've already built.
The wins for workers at Starbucks shows the U.S. labor movement is experiencing a resurgence. But the pushback from Starbucks has been fierce. There have been numerous allegations of union busting and campaigns by the company to discourage workers from organizing.
All of a sudden, every single part of the day that the store was open, there was a manager present. That very first meeting, it was a very slow walk into the union conversation. By the last meetings we were having, they were saying vocally, we want you to vote, we need everyone to vote, and we want you to vote no. You know, they were sending letters, like paper mail letters on the regular. They were sending emails. They were using the emergency text system that, till this campaign, I'd only ever seen used for like natural disasters and global pandemics. And all of a sudden I'm getting a 7 a.m. text on a Saturday morning, you know, telling me why I should be voting no for this union campaign.
Starbucks and other companies will often delay union elections or contract negotiations in hopes that workers will quit before a vote is secured. This often happens with fast food chains, where workers come and go so quickly, it's difficult to build a core of committed union activists. Michelle says the company cut workers' hours, transferred employees among stores, and hired an unusually high number of new staff members, all in an effort to crush support for the union.
So what they did here in Buffalo, which was fascinating, was they did a mass hire. They took all of the hiring away from the store managers, which is previously how it had been done. There was like a hiring portal, and the store manager would go into it if they were looking to, you know, hire for a certain time frame. And they would conduct the interview, and then that new worker would train at that store that was going to be their home store by the workers that they were going to work with. And very shortly after we went public, they cut all of the access the store managers had to this hiring portal off. They weren't allowed to go in there anymore. They brought in these outside recruiters and they did this mass hire. And then they shut down a store. They shut down a store that had filed a petition to unionize. So they hired all these people. They brought them into a closed store. Corporate trained them. And what we've been told by these poor workers was that there was no real training going on. And then they dispersed them all to our various stores. And then they put these new workers who had never even been in these stores on our voter list, essentially giving them a vote in our election. In most cases, these people that they deliberately hired to get no votes ended up voting for the union because they just felt like they had been, you know, like scammed by this company. And when they realized that, you know, we cared about them, they didn't have to question whether they were going to vote for the union.
The coffee giant has even been accused of firing workers attempting to unionize. Former Starbucks barista Will Westlake says he was fired for wearing a mental health awareness pin at work. or at least that's the reason Starbucks gave for letting him go. He worked at a Starbucks in Buffalo that was one of the first stores that attempted to unionize in 2021. Will says he and others at his store wore the pin on their aprons after a coworker and fellow union supporter died by suicide.
In the wake of that death, I had had a coworker who bought a bunch of these American Federation for Suicide Prevention pins. It says, "You are not alone," and it has two pinkies that are interlocked with each other. They had bought a pin for the whole store, and so everyone was wearing them.
He says the store's management told him the pin was in violation of the company's dress code.
Our district manager said, "Those aren't allowed. You can't wear those." Which, you know, for Starbucks is kind of weird, right? For the most part, people can wear any kind of weird or silly pin that they want to. But for some reason, this one wasn't something that was acceptable.
Before he was fired, Will says he received multiple warnings for refusing to remove the pin. Will believes he was fired for his role in the labor organizing efforts.
They didn't want for people to be together on this like awful tragedy that had just happened, and then for them to go a step further and say, well, you're also not going to advocate for suicide awareness because, and they used coded language where they just say, like, it's not befitting of the company, like this pin is, you know, not appropriate for Starbucks because it could make customers kill themselves or other people in the store kill themselves if they see a pin that references suicide, which if they did even the smallest bit of research from the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, they would know that that is bogus.
The union benefited when some of the company's anti-union tactics backfired. The most spectacular example of this was when CEO Howard Schultz compared himself to Holocaust victims while addressing workers in Buffalo.
Men were separated from women, and women were separated from children. And one person for every six was given a blanket. One blanket for every six people. And the person who got the blanket had to decide what to do with this blanket that I have for myself. And not everyone, but most people, shared their blanket with five other people. And the rabbi says to me, take your blanket and go share it with five other people. And so much of that story is threaded into what we have tried to do at Starbucks, is share our blanket. Second story.
Michelle remembers turning her phone off during Howard's speech. And when she turned it back on,
ping, 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 ping. And I'm like, oh, something terrible. Like, did someone get arrested? Like, something must have happened at this event for this many people to be reaching out to me. And it was simply that this story had been so awful, this speech, that people were like, Michelle, you're not going to believe what happened.
If this sounds a little Twilight Zone to you, you're not alone. This is the last thing you'd expect to hear from a CEO of one of Fortune's most admired companies. Lynn says many Starbucks workers who are pro-union came to the company because of its reputation as a progressive employer.
The baristas came to this company because they so admired the philosophy of the company, and they were shattered that it really wasn't playing out in reality. The one other big difference about this campaign that I think is worth mentioning is that the partners love this company and have great hope and aspiration for what it could be. It could be a leader in the human capital world. And instead, they've taken it personally. I mean, really, the CEO has taken it personally. And it's become a philosophical fight. And it's gotten pretty ugly, I would have to say, pretty ugly.
Michelle says the company's benefits and socially progressive culture were a big draw for her.
I knew they had a good reputation for, you know, how they treated their customers, what they thought about their community and the environment, and, you know, most importantly, how they treated their workers.
Michelle says she joined Starbucks in 2010. And for the first few years she worked there, she said the company lived up to their mission. But then things started to slip.
You definitely saw a change in how they valued their workers, particularly how they valued their longtime workers. The benefits prices started to go up and the coverage started to go down. Different perks or bonuses that were offered fairly regularly when I started, they just stopped being offered.
Michelle says she had been planning to quit her job at Starbucks before the organizing effort got underway. That is, until one of her coworkers, Jazz, sent her a text.
She said, "Hey, do you have time to get a cup of coffee after one of your shifts this week?" And I was like, "Sure, absolutely." I liked Jazz. We didn't get to work together that often. So we met a few days later in the back parking lot behind our store, which is where most of us park our cars. And it was a beautiful August day, like not too hot, just one of those really nice days. And I said, "Okay, Jazz, what's up?" And she said, very quietly in her sort of Jazz manner, "I was wondering what you thought about Starbucks unionizing."
Michelle admits she needed a crash course in labor organizing, even though she originally wasn't going to be very involved in the campaign. She says the turning point came when she attended her first anti-union meeting with a Starbucks executive.
We're all sitting in this circle, and she's got tears in her eyes, and she's trying to tell us how sorry she is that the company has failed this market, because these problems don't exist anywhere else in the country. They're somehow just in Buffalo, and she doesn't know why it happened. But, you know, they're here to fix all of this stuff. And, you know, we're all partners. Partner is the term that Starbucks uses to refer to its workers. And they use it from the very top CEO all the way down to the lowest paid hourly worker. And it's used in a very manipulative way. And she said, "We're all partners." And essentially saying, "This company has already given us all so much. You know, let us fix these issues. And then, like, what more do you want?" And I was so infuriated because I'm looking around this circle and it's maybe about a third of my store at the time. And people look scared. They look intimidated. They're not sure why they're there. They can't understand why this millionaire is talking to them like we're all the same. And they go, "Okay, so we're going to talk about this union campaign," as much as they could say, you know, just walking the line of legality. And they said, "We're just here to give you the facts, you know, yeah. But if you want facts about the union, you need to contact a union organizer," implying that it was some like mythical creature in a dark robe in a corner somewhere. And I was like, "That's it." And I raised my hand and I said, "Hey guys, you know, I'm one of the union organizers and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have." And that was kind of the beginning of the end for me because there was absolutely no turning back after that moment.
The campaign changed Michelle's life. She testified before Congress in front of the House Education and Labor Committee about her organizing experiences.
"It should not take an act of bravery to ensure that you have a voice at work. We need Starbucks to recognize our desire to organize, which the NLRA explicitly states is our right. We need Starbucks to stop mistreating the workers it claims to care about and to fulfill its legal obligation to come to the table and negotiate with us in good faith. We are tired of fighting a company that can afford to do better by its hourly workers. We are tired of listening to billionaire CEOs take sole credit for the billions of dollars of profit made off our labor. We are tired of watching Starbucks continue to violate workers' rights, knowing that the law will fail to offer any meaningful consequences. But most of all, we are tired of fighting Howard Schultz's ego."
Michelle is among the hundreds of Starbucks employees across the U.S. who have helped turn a grassroots campaign into a national labor movement. As of the original release of this episode, over 270 stores have voted to join Workers United, but none of them have a contract yet. It's been a tough slog, but there's been progress. In March 2023, a federal judge ruled that Starbucks had violated labor laws hundreds of times during the organizing campaign in Buffalo. And now this shareholder, and others like me, are taking notice and asking the question, in the investments that we make, what does it profit? What does it profit? We are not unbiased observers. We believe in the power of the human spirit and the uncompromising dignity of all of us. even those of us who fall short. That's the thing. What I learned here is that we all need a voice, and that organizing is a human right, plain and simple. At the time of this recording, we are a few days out from the Starbucks annual shareholder meeting. We're also a couple of weeks out from a Senate hearing, where Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz will testify in front of Bernie Sanders, the chair of the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. Yes, that's a real thing, the HELP Committee. People are watching. People aren't responding. So, what can you do? Click on the links in the show notes to keep up with the campaign. Included is a Starbucks Workers United petition to show your solidarity. My next tall, skim, no-water chai latte will be served to a podcast host who has dreams of her favorite coffee spot being a great place for all of us. Send us your Starbucks stories on Twitter at WDIP Podcast and tag us with the hashtag WDIP. You'll also find us on LinkedIn at What Does It Profit Podcast. Next up on What Does It Profit? The inside story of one of the most dangerous jobs in the U.S.
It took like months for them to, you know, start giving out face masks. Even then, it was an issue because the masks would become soiled with blood as workers were working, and they weren't given like a second face mask or a replacement. So I think there were, you know, lots of calls for things to change, but very little actually did.
What Does It Profit is a production of the Solidarity Economy Workshop at Georgetown University. The show is hosted by me, Dr. Dawn Carpenter. Jordan Gaspore is our senior producer. Our sound engineer and designer is Mark Bush. Special thanks to our Season 3 researchers and assistant producers, Sophia Chen, Hannah Woodford, and Andy Fang. Music for What Does It Profit was composed by Nick Pennington. Support for What Does It Profit is provided by the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor, the McDonough School of Business, and the Capital Applied Learning Lab at Georgetown University. You can learn more at whatdoesitprofitpodcast.com. And just before we let you go, remember, never stop asking yourself, in the work that you do and the investments that you make, what does it profit?